One of these days, I'm gonna sit down and write a long letter to all the good friends I've known. And I'm gonna try.
What's going on for you in your world?
Oh God. Don't even. I appreciate you asking, but no.
Are you in a world of shit?
Yeah, pretty much.
All right.
Which, you know, is as it should be, I suppose, in one sense.
Yeah. I saw it was Scrambo Crabfeather's comment today, or his post today. It was, "I am in a world of shit." And it immediately made me think of the 667 as the Scarlet Woman being, as Malkuth, being literally a world of shit. So I was like, then again, aren't we all in a world of shit, was my thought around that.
Well, you saw, so today is June 6th. And someone put up that it's June 6, 2013, so 2 plus 1 plus 3 is 6. So I had seen someone put up that today was 666, if you want to take it that way.
Okay. So, I can take it that way.
So tomorrow, so we'll have to wait till tomorrow to really be in a world of shit.
Right.
No. That'll just be 6-7. Never mind. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what the fuck I'm saying anymore.
Oh, Phil.
Hello.
Hello. Is this your iPhone?
It's the iPhone.
Nice. Well, you sound okay.
So we've been joined by Hal.
How are the games today? Fuck, man. I feel very much 37 right now.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, this whole getting old thing is really a drag.
It's real, man. It's fucking real.
Yeah.
The whole, like, not recovering as quickly, being... I don't want to talk about it. I just want to... I feel like I'm rotting. You ever see Schenectady, New York?
Love that fucking movie.
I hate that. I mean, it's a wonderful movie. I hate it. Makes me feel so dead inside.
Oh, yeah.
But this past week, it's all I can think about because I feel like my body is just rotting and I'm watching it rot.
I'm buying a juicer today.
Good.
That's great. We're getting a Vitamix tomorrow.
Nice, you guys. Good for
you. Is that the one? Is Vitamix the one?
Vitamix is great. Vitamix is incredible. Yeah, that's a good idea. Are you getting a newer model? Are you getting an older model?
They're
expensive.
Yeah, they are expensive. But Melissa and I have been talking about this for a long time, and it's just sort of like we think it's a worthwhile investment.
Yeah, it is. I haven't been without a Vitamix for like the last 10 years. I love them. I use it all the time.
My brain needs a juicer, man.
Yep. You got a Champion?
Did you put your brain through a juicer? Is that how it
Jesus,
feels?
Son of a bitch. Absolutely. Yeah, I did. You know how I started the night? With this Lucifer Belgian-style strong pale. Have you ever heard of this?
Yes.
Jesus.
It's got the devil on the front with the horns,
it's
and he's all
got
evil.
It's evil, and it's like an orange. It was a can of beer.
Oh.
A 16-ounce can of beer.
Different one, but yeah. Awesome.
Jesus, yeah, it was delicious.
The devil is pretty delicious.
Motherfucker.
Bill, just to answer your question, you said, is the Vitamix is not exactly a juicer. It's basically like a super high-powered blender. It's basically, it does... Because we have a blender and a food processor, and we were talking about getting a juicer. And a Vitamix will essentially do all of the above and more. So it'll, you know, whereas a juicer, you're left with for lack of a better term, pulp and stuff like that, which just you end up composting, or sometimes you can kind of reuse in other ways. But the Vitamix will kind of, I think they call it like emulsify it. So you end up using the whole...
Everything. Yeah. You can put like a whole orange in there, you know, and it'll just take the, you wouldn't even know that it had a skin, you know. It's awesome.
So you would say Vitamix over a juicer?
Well, if you don't, yeah, I would say that. Would you say that?
That was our decision, yeah.
Sold. I'm glad I had this talk today. See, you pushed me in the right direction.
They are super expensive, though.
Like what, 400, 300, 5,000?
Around 300 for a new, but you can get like used ones, you know, especially if you know somebody that treated it right. But yeah.
Yeah, even looking at used ones were pretty expensive. You could find like used ones for like $300 and new ones between $400 and $450. So,
I'm gonna use the Amazon credit card.
I think mine was from the 80s. It's like silver, and it's like the Cadillac of. So we got a mailbag, apparently, Bill. We're gonna go through a little bit if you're into it.
Really?
Well,
how does that make you feel?
It's kick ass, dude.
Well, okay, so there's a few, I mean, there's something else I want to address, and there's something David wanted to bring into the show. But this was just an idea that's been kicking around for me. Is I'll just quickly repeat this: is my inbox is a disaster. I get too many emails and don't really organize it well, and then I never have the time to respond. So that means two things. It means I'm only going to bring up a few messages, or maybe while we're talking, I can keep looking for other messages. But what I thought was, rather than me trying to find the time to respond to people, I could just kind of read their message, and we could take a few minutes on air to each, you know, to talk about it. And this way, it's everyone on the show is responding rather than just me trying to write someone saying, "Thank you for messaging us. I appreciate your interest," or, you know, whatever my off the cuff response is. So something like that. What do you think of that?
Love the mailbag.
grape juice.
So, David, did you want to bring up your thing first, or do you want to?
Oh, no, that's fine. We can go right into it. I have some synchronicity film stuff that I'm excited about, but we can go into that later.
Okay.
Can I just quickly get something off my chest?
Yeah, please.
I got to get feedback on this. I really got to get feedback on this. And it's regards to some campaigns on fundraising websites by very talented people, and them running up against not so, for lack of a better term, flattering results in regards to that. I'm sure you guys are aware of Andras's campaign and the Music Myth, and is it Magic?
Cosmos,
that project. And obviously very talented people and very talented work going into those projects, but not really raising the kind of dollars that they would seem to deserve, right? Like, those should be going through the roof.
I'm very surprised. Excuse me, actually.
So I just wanted to take a very sort of remove myself from the situation and ask you guys, if you didn't know the talent behind the people and the projects, what did you think of the pitch? Meaning, do you think that the pitch could have been improved, and therefore that could have generated more interest in the project? Let's not blame the community for not donating dollars. Do you feel that there was any element to the pitch that could have been improved?
I'll have to admit, I didn't see Andras's original Indiegogo pitch. Maybe I did, and it just wasn't memorable. I did see one of his update videos. I actually helped him with one of his update videos, just making some content for it. It's hard because it seems to me, based on what I've seen from Kickstarter and I guess now Indiegogo, but I'm more familiar with the Kickstarter videos, That video is super important.
Yeah.
I'm not as familiar with all of that. I mean, I know it's going on, but I haven't read anybody's pitch. I haven't looked at any of it, really. Sure. It's a shame. I assumed when I saw that, just to the degree that I thought that it would do. I didn't realize it wasn't doing well. So
sorry. When you we were talking there, I got a wrong number just called me, so I put you on hold. I have seen Kevin Halcott had a successful Kickstarter.
Yes.
And I thought they had a great video. Their video was Kevin has a wonderful and talented girlfriend named Allison, who is a photographer and videographer, and she put together a video for them with them that I thought was really wonderful. Now it's obviously he's pitching a band; they're able to play their music in the background. It had a sort of the video itself had the feel of the music, and you got to sort of introduce each of the band members, and it was just very, it was kind of humble but also artsy, and it's like, hey, I want to support your art. So I thought that was a great pitch. I have seen, it's interesting, I know Steve Wilner made a video for someone else's Kickstarter, a woman who was starting like a kale chip company.
Nice.
And I don't know if that was successful or not. I honestly don't know what how that campaign turned out, but I thought that video was really solid because it was very much a pitch. The Music Myth Cosmos thing, it seems sort of like a combination of basically they took a teaser, if you will, or a sort of sample type video, and then seem to kind of have tacked on a kind of pitch afterwards. And I'm wondering if, I don't know, maybe that should have been sort of integrated together rather than here's a sort of 5 minutes of psychedelic exploration and then here's 5 minutes of, hey, we want your money. Maybe you sort of fuse those together or sort of intermittently. Do you know what I'm saying? Kind of, I could picture it more, but that's, you know, is that just how I would have done it, or is that the right? I don't know. I can't say what's the right and wrong way to do it. I thought the Music Myth Cosmos video seemed pretty good. The actual, for lack of a better term, teaser seemed pretty good. It seemed like something I'd want to see more of. The pitch to me was not as strong, but I also think, you know, I think that's one of the hardest things about this community is we're not salesmen. I mean, I've had to figure out in the last 2 years how to kind of become a little bit more of a salesman, you know, ever since the Sync book, and then kind of having to go out and try and, you know, pitch this stuff, even if I'm not trying. I mean, I'm not asking for $20,000. I'm just asking people to check out this community's work. And even still, I've had to learn kind of how to be more of a salesman. And that's a big learning curve for someone who's had their face in their art for all these years to figure out how to sell it.
I hate it.
Yeah.
I'm not very good at marketing. Amy helps me out a lot when we go out to events now because I'm showing my art pretty regularly, and she's set up the clipboard and has it so I can take their names, people can make down payments, got the little chip to connect to the cell phone so that people can swipe a credit card anywhere, like all of that stuff. I wouldn't have been I'm not inclined in that way. So I don't know. That's for the same reason that, like, when I hear friends and things that are doing these Kickstarter things, like, I have a difficulty with it. I mean, I don't have anything against it. I just I'm have a, like, kind of somewhat of an aversion to self-promotion and self-marketing. So I can appreciate that they're doing it, and I wish them all the best, but I'm just not oriented in that way. It's kind of weird.
I think it was Warhol who said basically the art of, you know, that there was an art of business and it was just as important and just as took just as much talent as the, you know, the art of art.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's why he was able to take people that really were not able to do that. And, you know, people would say he exploited them, but no one would know who Basquiat is. I mean, they had the most obvious example, but he definitely helped a lot of artists become recognized who would never take the initiative to make that happen for themselves.
Or Nico. Yeah.
Or Nico, for that matter, totally.
Yeah. You know, not knocking Nico, but I think without Warhol, she would. Sure. I don't think she would have had a shot.
Sure. No, totally. Because then it became art, you know. Yeah. It was connected with him, and then people associated Velvet Underground in general with him. So, yeah.
I could see Lou Reed still being successful without Warhol, not Nico.
Maybe. Because I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of successful musicians at that time that did not make it, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah. So who the fuck knows? You know? I'm curious of what's in the bag.
I want to address something. So I was sorry. While we're on the topic of Kickstarters and Indiegogos, I am fully supportive of Steve and Ezra's campaign and Andras's campaign. There's a few other campaigns, and it's not just because they're my friends. Like there was a Kickstarter campaign for Dino Stanatopoulos. He's an animator, did like Moral Oral. He worked on that show Community, which I actually really didn't like, but I know everyone else loved it. I didn't like it. But he's a fantastic animator. And the stuff that he did for Adult Swim I thought was really solid. He is working with, I want to say, Charlie Kaufman. They had a Kickstarter asking for $200,000. And they made $400,000.
Jesus Christ.
Now, these are people who... These are people who, obviously have access to Hollywood funding, you know? And yet their thing was, hey, we can get funding, but we can only get funding for things that are going to be controlled. You know, we're going to be told what we have to make. And they would, you know, basically, hey, can we make something that's completely independent? And if you like the stuff that we do, you know, why the hell not see what we really want to do if we're not being controlled?
Well, that's really interesting, your whole deal there, because you have somebody who has access to something that, like, when I think of Kickstarter, I'm thinking of independent artists who are really, like, struggling to get their art out there, and then you have people that could be funded, you know? I mean, it's interesting, like, I know with Kubrick, if it wasn't for Spartacus, he would have never gotten to do 2001, which was basically him selling out to a degree, you know? Like, he did that, like, you know, did what he had to do in order to be given the freedom. But they've kind of been challenging the status quo to a degree in general. Like, I mean, Eternal Sunshine was like really, really something different on multiple levels. So, I mean, I don't know.
There are mainstream things that did Kickstarters that at first I was a little...
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, welcome back.
So I was a little turned off when I first saw that, like, Charlie Kaufman's doing a Kickstarter, and I'm like, well, this guy could get the funding. Bill, can you hear us? This is not working.
Wow. See, this is why, this is the problem with alcohol.
It fucks up your iPhone?
It fucks up your iPhone.
Oh, God.
Always the next morning, too. That's when it really gets to your iPhone.
So, yeah, I was gonna say, I think I wanted to address Bill's concern. I'm just gonna do this without him. Is it the pitch? I think also part of it is the prizes that they offer. You know, you have to get really creative with what you're offering as a prize. And there is a Reality Sandwich is doing a Kickstarter at the same time. And
I read out their deal and I was really impressed.
Really? You were impressed?
Yeah, I was impressed. I mean, on the level that not to the degree that if I had money I would necessarily be putting it in that direction, as much as I could appreciate that I would like to see that expand, you know.
Was not impressed by their thing. I actually didn't watch their video. So maybe their video is a well-produced video pitch, but I thought their written pitch was horrendous. And they're offering things like a new age beach towel. If you pledge $200, some Mary Rainbow Feather designed this amazing beach towel with a picture of, you know, Buddha and what, it's like the most cliched bullshit on a fucking beach towel.
I don't remember that part. Did I see that? I must have seen the same thing. I saw a Reality Sandwiches thing. Maybe I didn't read the whole deal or whatever, but I don't know. I don't remember a beach towel in there, but I believe you.
Let's. Wow. I mean, this is me taking the unpleasant point of view of all this. Basically, I'm pretty offended by the amount of money they're asking. Reality Sandwich is asking for $40,000, offering you a beach towel, and my other thing is that Daniel Pinchbeck is the I'm the return of Quetzalcoatl and the 2012 guy. You cannot post 2012. You cannot ask for $40,000. Guess what? You didn't turn into fucking Jesus on December 21st, 2012. You now have no right to ask for $40,000. Sorry,
right.
You're done.
Right.
You're done.
Okay. I got you. I mean, I it's funny because I don't automatically associate Reality Sandwich just with, I mean, I see what you're saying.
I mean, that's his thing.
It existed before he got involved, didn't it?
I think he's one of the co-founders. Whatever. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You can't.
I hear you. What you're like. I get it.
But I said this to Bill in a private conversation, and I'm putting this out there for the public, and people can call me an asshole if they want to. But my thing is this: if you're one of the people who was talking about a 2012 ascension, notice there's a few people out there who, hey, guess what? I didn't ascend to the fifth dimension. I guess I'm stuck here on Earth in a world of shit, and now I realize that I guess if I'm stuck here, I need some money.
Right.
It comes across to me.
Totally. Yeah, no, I hear you. That makes
sense.
So,
I mean, here we are a few months into 2013 and you're asking for 40 grand? Sorry. Yeah. And then bear in mind, these are the same people who put out a book called What Comes After Money, about how we're approaching this new time where we won't need money anymore. Well, if you don't need money, I'm not giving you any of mine.
Right.
Because I need money. If you don't, maybe you don't. You're going off to fifth dimension to hang out with Quetzalcoatl. Why don't you ask your buddy Quetzalcoatl for some money?
I got you.
All from a fucking beach towel. Let's see what he says.
Right. I could see how, people looking at their deal could actually, like, only in the sense that, like, you have some alternative media that isn't really alternative. Right. And, like, I like the idea of putting something towards you know, anything that's just like really pushing the envelope and pointing out that things that were not in the popular mind have become in the popular mind. And that's the part that I remember from the article. That's really the only thing that stuck, was that they were emphasizing that, you know, we had these people, you know, kind of pushing a completely different worldview. And that worldview is, you know, it's not the norm, but compared to what it was when Reality Sandwich first started, is quite different. Are they responsible for that? Fuck no. But at the same time, they're contributing to something that I appreciate.
Absolutely they are. But that was, you know, yeah. So it's like, but it's funny because I guess I'm reading their pitch totally differently. They're saying, it seems like just yesterday, when topics Reality Sandwich covered were considered to be on the far-out fringe, subjects like shamanism, non-local consciousness, visionary art, alternative economics, psychedelics, permaculture, transformative festivals, near-death experiences, and tantra, to name but a few. Now the rest of the world is catching up, or catching on. But it says... I'm sorry. It's because there's actually a funny thing it says here. I want to find the exact thing, but it basically says we were cool 10 years ago when no one was talking about this stuff, but now we're kind of inconsequential, and help us, if you give us $40,000, we can be a thing again. Whereas here we are now, I'm speaking as Syncbook Press, we have a zero budget.
Mm-hmm.
I'm struggling to fucking stay alive while doing this stuff. Now obviously we don't have the impact of a Reality Sandwich. Maybe we don't have, you know, we're not there yet, whatever it is. What I'm saying is, if you have a zero budget, you're trying to be important because you are going for those things, those topics and the approaches that, you know, trying to raise your game in ways that don't cost $40,000. And I'm sorry, if you have a bigger audience and you're finding yourself without really being that important anymore, $40,000 isn't going to help you.
Mm.
What's going to help you is to get your act together, get out of the beach towel business, and get into the consciousness business. Start doing something that's edgy and informative. You know, there are other gambles you can take. Well, I don't see what money's going to do for you at that point.
Sure. I mean, with your part of your point, you know, I have an image just like coming to mind of the smile on Jodorowsky's face when there's a video of Daniel Pinchback and Jodorowsky going for a walk in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And Pinchback tells him his spiel about 2012. And Jodorowsky's smile and saying, I think you're gonna need more time than that. Like, just like his like experience and like his practicality and his understanding of the way that these things work, you know, he's like, what? And he and Pinchback is just like, no, I think that's it, that's our, you know, our, and like, it's just like a level, and it's just naive, you know. But it's like the amount of wisdom in Jodorowsky's eyes and smile just are what comes to mind when I think of the people asserting the 2012 as the way that it's been asserted, as the assumption that we even know what we're talking about from the other side, you know?
I think once you get out there and you are saying, you know what's going on and I'm going to sell you the truth – well, that's when you became unimportant, not because you know, have you stopped searching?
Right.
And now you're telling. I don't know. I mean, I guess I shouldn't speak for everyone who works with Reality Sandwich. There's obviously a lot more people involved. I just can't, in my mind, I associate them with Pinchback. That was his platform, and certainly they've, you know, used his name and pitched him
They pinched him, I believe.
But yeah, I just, yeah, exactly. I guess it's funny because in, when I was doing Sync Book 2, I don't know if I should make this public, but basically when I was doing Sync Book 2, I asked Pinchbeck if he wanted to contribute a chapter, and he basically said, "You can't afford me." And I said, you know, basically it was like, well, you just put out a book called What Comes After Money. No. What? So what does come after money? What, you know, if we're at the point where I can't afford you, it's like, so
I see, like, your lens of your relationship to the reality sandwich with all of this being said, for sure.
So yeah. I mean, whatever. I mean, like I said, I really have no beef with them. It's just like I feel like you lose if you're pitching the idea that 2012 you're gonna the world's gonna transform or you're gonna fucking ascend or all this sort of shit. You can't ask for 40 grand when that doesn't happen. If it happened, you can ask for 40 grand. You could say, "See, I told you. Here we are chilling with fucking Buddha and Quetzalcoatl in the fifth dimension. Give me 40,000 energy units or something." If it doesn't happen, you can't ask for the money. Sorry, you fucked up. You can't ask for it. Anyway, you mentioned Jodorowsky, so I'm gonna. I know what you want. You're tempted to do the mailbag. I'm tempted to do it too, but I'm gonna give you. I need to bring this up to you.
Cool.
You mentioned Jodorowsky.
Yeah, I'm excited about his new film too.
I have been replaying a scene from Holy Mountain in my head for the last 2 weeks.
Okay.
Basically, 2 weeks ago, I went with some guy around here. We went to get some stuff. I've been making a garden out back, and we went to get some supplies. And as we're out driving, the guy's like, "I'm really hungry. Let's stop somewhere." And we drive past a pizzeria, and I say, "Oh, I miss New York pizza. Any pizza I've tried down here hasn't been very good." And he's like, "Oh," and we drove past this place, and it was apparently like a fast food chain pizza. And he's like, "Oh, well, you got to try this," but kind of like messing around, because he's like, "You're not going to have worse pizza than this." So we went to this thing, and it's like $5 for all you can eat pizza. And it's basically like sub Pizza Hut quality. It was pretty gross. Pretty damn gross. And my body hated me for it. But we're in this place, and I'm sort of like this really, I was just so weirded out by the vibe. And I'm watching these like diabetic children, you know, in families of seven. And I realize it's like, if you have a family of seven and you have no money, probably an all-you-can-eat pizza place for $5 fits right into your budget. And that's sad that those kids are not going to be able – those kids are not going to be able to get a Vitamix. They're going to get all-you-can-eat high-fructose corn syrup pizza.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty damn sad.
Sure.
So the whole thing, and I you know, it's funny because what I think of it as is sort of making a deal with the devil. Like, I looked at the plate of food for a good few minutes before I actually bit into it, and I was like, I feel like I'm selling my soul to the devil by, you know, it's kind of like Bill's can of devil beer. It's like I was looking at this food and I'm like, do I actually put this in my body?
Uh-huh.
You know, and I kind of had to make my peace with it, and then I ate it. And I haven't been the same since. I've been having an existential crisis since then. And it's because it was just like the whole environment. And one of the things they have there, so I'm watching these like, you know, if not diabetic, soon to be diabetic children chowing down on this food in this really bizarre environment. And what do they have? But they have these video games, these like, you know, the like arcade games with the guns that you like shoot them up. You know, you take almost like Duck Hunt. I mean, I had Duck
Hunt.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. No, I got you.
And it's like
an Uzi.
Yeah. And it's like fight the terrorist video game. It's like, you know, terrorist attack or something, and then you put in your quarters and you get to shoot the terrorists. And I'm thinking, like, I go into conspiratorial mode and I'm like, this is pure training for teaching kids to shoot at whoever we tell you to shoot at. We're going to say terrorist, and you shoot at them. And I'm thinking, of course, of the scene in Holy Mountain when you see the woman from Saturn, or who represents Saturn, mm-hmm. and she says, we manufacture...
Captain, the Peruvian monster. Yeah, totally.
And we train these kids for 15 years to hate the enemy that we want to go to war with.
Yeah, you know, that was May 1st that comic book said. It was like the date on the comic book that's Captain.
Of course, yeah.
There's your Osama connection there. Anyway.
No, yeah, absolutely. Then I went to the laundromat a few days ago, and there's this video game, same style arcade game with the guns that you just instead of a joystick, you have a gun and you aim at the screen. And it was called Area 51, and in it you're shooting at aliens. But there's this really weird thing, because I mean, I didn't play these games, but I'm looking at the artwork on it, and it says Area 51 in this like metallic writing, and it has pictures of dangerous looking aliens and, you know, good guy heroes shooting at them and whatever.
I've seen the game. I played the game, yeah.
Well, on the side of the game, a part of the artwork, it wasn't like someone wrote it on there, were a capital letter S and a lowercase letter I. Now, I'm looking at this and I'm like, this is really weird. And I was like, I guess this could kind of be like a stylized variation on 51, Area 51. So the 5 becomes the S and the 1 becomes the I. But it really makes no sense to do that. And that it's a lowercase I. And it's like, why would you even do this? And I'm like, so what does it say but C? There's Spanish. It's like, it's sort of the Spanish yes is written there, along with 51. So it's like Area 51C. Hmm. I should have gotten a photo of it. But so I'm thinking, why would you do that? And I'm still in this weird conspiratorial mode of having just seen the shoot 'em up terrorist game. And I'm thinking, well, what in here in the United States, what do we call Mexican illegal immigrants, but aliens?
Mm-hmm.
And here's a game telling you to shoot at aliens.
Sure. Yeah.
And all I could think about was, again, the Jodorowsky's Holy Mountain.
Right. And it's divide and conquer, because the more tension exists, the more people are easily controlled. Because they're, as long as they have an enemy that's one of themselves, then they're not in any position to organize towards another enemy. That's, yeah, keeps them occupied.
Yeah. So I just wanted to bring that up, because that's been on my mind. During all this, Will Morgan put up a thing saying, you know, what would be the toy if Teddy Roosevelt had a teddy bear? What would be Obama's toy?
Mm-hmm.
And this is just sort of like, and everyone's like, oh, it should be this or this. And then a few of us were saying, like, it should be drones, or, you know, just sort of have this idea of like toys, war toys, is really pinging very loudly for me the last week or two.
We manufacture war toys.
bomb shop. Workers needed in the miniature plastic bomb shop.
We have an electronic computer programmed with the politics of the government. The government is our client. We feed the computer data on coming wars and revolutions. It tells us what kind of toys to produce, to condition children from birth. For example, if the government calculates that it will be necessary to wage war against Peru, our machine studies the Peruvians and tells us what to do. We manufacture hyper-sexed brown native vampires who can only be destroyed by a cross the color of white skin. We create a laxative that induces vomiting. We name it after the capital of Peru and tint it with the color of the natives. We started a comic book campaign. For 15 years in advance, we condition children to hate the future enemy. In 15 years, these children will go off to war to kill Peruvians with pleasure.
So I'm just going to go ahead and bring up my movie syncs. Had a very rich week in movie synchronicity. Funeral Bed of Roses has been on my, or Funeral Parade of Roses has been on my mind for a while. And I kept on just seeing the link between Their Majesty's Satanic Request by the Rolling Stones and Magical Mystery Tour by the Beatles, which came out the same day and year, which incidentally is my birthday, but that's beside the point. The point is that it was the death of John Lennon Day. So the December 8th is, the day John Lennon was killed. And so these albums are released the same day. And so not only that, but then you have the song, Let's Sing This Song Together. Let's Sing This All Together on Their Majesty's Satanic Request is with, I believe, Paul and I don't know, maybe John. I forget. But basically, two of the Beatles are participating in that song. And so Funeral Parade of Roses, which came out after these albums. But if you watch that director, the same guy who did Funeral Parade of Roses, the short film he did before that, I know it has the Rolling Stones on it, as I recall.
Oh, as Funeral Parade of Roses has the Beatles.
Right, in it. And you see the Beatles. And so basically I'm thinking about how A Clockwork Orange was inspired by Funeral Parade of Roses, the whole style and everything of the Corova Milk Bar and all this stuff. And then one scene in particular when the girls are sucking on the popsicles and Alex says to them, he goes, a bit cold and pointless, isn't it? You know, come back with Uncle, I'll handle you all proper. You'll hear devil trumpets and angel trombones or strike that, reverse it. And, takes it back to his place. That whole, them with those popsicles is totally like the ice cream cones.
Totally.
And you could just see it. And so I was noticing that in that scene, when he's standing there and he's talking to those girls, here you have at the bottom, you have in the underground section of the record store, you have the soundtrack to 2001: A Space Odyssey. And he actually on another point, he puts his staff down twice. He's holding a cane, Alex is, and he does the thing that they do in Eyes Wide Shut to get the girls to go to their knees when he's picking up on these girls. It's like totally like it's like neurolinguistic programming, right? But if you look up at in that scene, you can see on one side you have Magical Mystery Tour, and then on the other side you actually have Adam Hart Mother. And so I thought that that was really that caught my attention. I mean, there's a lot of records throughout the store. I mean, you can see like Rare Bird, As Your Mind Flies By, and a bunch of stuff, but in the Chelsea record store, I believe. So, but anyways, that's stuck. And so I ended up as an experiment. Also, Funeral Parade of Roses can't help but remind me of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Though I didn't play that with it, I played that with something else that just completely blew me away last night, which we'll talk about in a second. But I decided as an experiment, just I had these three albums in my mind, like connected with this film of the, because it's a funeral procession in Sgt. Pepper, just so you know what I'm talking about.
I mean, but, talking about the idea of the cover being a grave.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and so, and then this comes out after after this, and so it just, anyways,
And there, the word Beatles is actually written in flowers, so your Funeral Parade of Roses, right?
Yeah, you could go into crazy levels to it, because the Beatle in the first place, as Onstott points out, is the Silver Gate, the Beatles Gate, like the Beatle pushing the dung ball, the Scarab, is actually the gate of death. And so there's this, oh.
Hello, keep going.
Back. Hi. so as an experiment, are you eating a bag of chips?
Are you playing with, bubble, what do you call those? Like packing bubbles?
I'm eating medicine.
Okay.
Sorry.
Awesome. That's fine. So I decided to play in sequence, starting it out with Magical Mystery Tour, following it with Their Majesty's Satanic Request, and then ending it with the song Adam Hart Mother off of Adam Hart Mother. And what's interesting is that it's within 20 seconds of the end of that of the album is the end of Adam Hart Mother. Now the last song on Their Satanic Majesty's Request actually has like a fade out, like there's voices, there's not music at the end, and Adam Hart Mother actually has a fade in. So I've considered crossfading it ever so slightly, because you could easily make the thing fit in the exact slot. So I need to work with it a little bit more to get the timing just right, but within 20 seconds is pretty fucking awesome, especially with the fact that it's like perfect. It's an amazing soundtrack. And because the film is in Japanese, you have the subtitles throughout the whole thing, which really it's definitely I feel like it's the way to watch it, for sure. So I recommend that.
It's funny, because since we've been talking about this, when Bill and I first started talking a few, 2 years ago, year and a half, whatever, it's, I really don't even know how long it's been. It feels like a lifetime. but it was the idea of when he was explaining to me how he wanted the Kubrick Transformer. One of the things that I believe I mentioned to him, and if not, I certainly thought about it a number of times, is the idea of subtitles, of putting subtitles on the films. And I believe I've spoken to some people who said that they just thought that was too distracting, or it takes away from it. But I feel like you can kind of get this sense of. I'm wondering if certain lines even hit, where someone's saying something specifically, and does a lyric hit, or does a something. So it's just the whole idea of a subtitle addition to this kind of mashup has been something that's interested me for a while. Have you tried that before?
Well, the one with the Fame Monster and Metropolis, that's a science film that had subtitles in a sense, it does actually. So, and then it will have actual like paragraphs every so often. That one is just, it's not like certain science films have more speech. It's got a different quality to it. It doesn't, they don't overload you with subtitles. But I actually, it's funny. Most of the films that I watch with albums, I know every scene, I know what's going on, I know what's being said. I don't need the subtitles. But if you weren't as familiar, I could see how that could have a value. Although in certain ways, you're kind of taking in the thing as higher, you know. There's a meditation that's taking place. I could see how that could be a bit of a distraction in certain cases. Yet when the subtitles are already there, like with this film, for example, you can see like there's all these little clever things that, I mean, I don't know how intentional they are, but I really like the fact that it's Their Majesty's Satanic Quest. Here you have a movie about a queen. If you can, and so obviously, like my connection with Parade of Roses and it was. The fact that Their Majesty's Satanic is obviously modeled as a alternative version of the cover, you know, it's pretty cool.
I'm kind of a purist, and I kind of think that whenever most of the time with the movie, I pretty much know it so well, like David said, that I kind of know the words before they're even spoken. That almost kind of adds to the effect, is that you kind of have the movie already uploaded into your brain. But I think it's whatever you do with it, there's no rules to it, obviously. It's whatever works.
Right. So speaking of no rules to it, I have a huge recommendation for you guys. The Kenneth Anger film, what is it? Annihilation of the film. The one that has Marjorie Cameron, the Scarlet Woman, Jack Parsons. So, highly recommend watching that film with Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Wow.
The only thing is, originally that film was played on three screens, right? It was edited together in the way.
What film is this you're talking about?
The Inauguration of the Pleasure Dome.
Okay.
So the film originally was meant to be played on three screens, and he edited it to be one. Now, I noticed when I was looking at the timing, I was comparing the time of the album Sgt. Pepper to the timing of the Inauguration of the Pleasure Dome, and I realized that if it was like basically 2 minutes and 37 to 40 seconds different, that would actually be enough for it to start when Anger's name disappeared and when the end of the movie is, which is 28 something minutes long. And so I look at the album and I notice that there's three songs that are all the same timing. There's Fixing a Hole, When I'm 64, and For the Benefit of Mystikite. And so I realized that, and they're all 2 minutes and 37 seconds thereabouts long, and so I realized that if any one of those was to be removed, that would be the same length as the film. And so I tried it two different ways. I haven't done it removing For the Benefit of Mystikite, but the other two, it felt like that was the meaning of the song Fixing a Hole. It's super trippy. So that basically, you know, on one level, however you slice the pan pizza, it's still going to be pan pizza. But then, like that's like all part of it. Like it's a fucking super psychedelic film, right? And it's a super psychedelic album. But it's really incredible. And I suggest you try like watching it, then rewatching it with a variation, and then rewatching it with a variation. It sounds weird, but.
Well, since you brought up Kenneth Anger, I want to dip into the mailbag here because this is something I had forwarded to you guys, and I know you actually tried. So this was an email from a gentleman named